Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Mike Fisher.
Here.
Gordon Ford.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Wes Hall.
Here.
Mike Lynch. Ron Martin.
Here.
Clarence Willman.
Here.
Linda Stoss Burnett.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. We move on to announcements. And under announcements, I'd like to say that this is the last meeting for this calendar year. The next meeting is going to be January 13th. Wednesday, right? Okay.
Of course, this is Mr. West Hall's last meeting.
Yep.
At least this one for this organization.
Yeah. Well, he gets elected to something else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you were specific here.
Any other announcements? Okay. If not, we'll go to public comment. Any member of the public may speak on any item which is on the agenda. The board will only allow comments by members of the public on any item on the agenda during consideration of the item. When the regular agenda item during the public, any, can't even talk here. The general public at the beginning of the regular agenda, at the beginning of the.
What'd you have for lunch?
Good thing it's my last meeting. At the beginning of the regular agenda, during the public consent period, may address matters under the jurisdiction of the board and not on the posted agenda. However, any person wishing to make a presentation must submit their issue in written form. With copies furnished to the board members, presentation will be limited to 3 minutes. I got through that paragraph. That was tough. So, I can now call on Doug Estes.
Okay, where it says written form, I didn't submit anything in writing.
Well, if you do a long presentation. You end up here for a long time?
No. Okay, my first thing would be Wes Hall. I'd like to thank him publicly for the many, 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 many years of service.
Thank you.
And we'll really miss him on the board, but we'll hope to still see you around. Number two, I'd like to talk about lawsuits that are coming up. Seems I read about in the paper. And I don't agree with lawsuits. I think everybody loses when there's lawsuits. And part of it is about the $50 million transfer and the $10 million transfer. I think the $50 million transfer was perfectly legal. Wasn't a problem with it because it increased the solvency of the system. However, the $10 million that's being transferred and only really reduces the county's payment into the system doesn't help the retirement system at all. It only helps the employer. And I think in casually reading some of the decisions that they've rendered in the courts, and I'm not an attorney, but looking at them, it seemed fairly clear that was a benefit to the employer, which is considered rating. But I think that there's going to be a problem on both sides. But I think the lawsuit should be dispelled and people like meet together and get it taken care of without paying a whole bunch of attorneys. I once saw that attorneys were actually prehistoric. They were prehistoric times. They found some caves in Italy and they saw the cow. At the front of the cow was a guy pulling it toward him. The back of the cow was a guy on the tail pulling it toward him. In the middle of the cow was an attorney milking it. Okay, so anyway, some of the issues that could come from this, retirement money, the employees paid into it, the county paid into it, we got these funds, and they had these things called excess earnings. And at a meeting at Gallo, I was there when we took away the money from retirees that have been retired since, I don't know, 1980 or something. I remember a lady stood up who was elderly, my great-grandmother maybe, age, and said how she really needed that money to live. Now that morning at 10 o'clock, the Board of Supervisors gave the sheriffs a 10% raise. That afternoon at 5 o'clock, they took away the little money this lady got. I thought that was wrong. Now by giving the sheriffs a 10% raise, they really increased the retirement by 7.5% to 10%. Because most sheriffs get 3%, they retire between 75 and 100%. So one way to fix this problem would be to eliminate raises on employees. We have a study that the retirees, whether they receive a raise or not. And so this year they said, you shouldn't get a raise because whatever things that they use say you don't get money. Social Security, same thing. No raises this year because of that. But yet the county continues to give raises. Those raises raise retirement benefits. If the issue is that the employees are getting too much in total compensation, the total compensation gives salary plus benefits, and a good benefit is retirement system, then why not stop raises until they equal what we think they should be? And that, I don't know how many sheriffs will retire that receive the 10% raise will retire 365 days after that particular increase. I'm sure there might be a few that were waiting for that system. But it doesn't seem like we're doing everything we could to make the system viable. And with the public looking and saying, oh my gosh, they make all this money in salary, they make all this money in retirement, well, we can't stop retirement very easily, but we can stop that. The other issue is look at what the employees pay in. Maybe the employees should pay more into it. The public concept of it is that it's all paid for by the government. That's not true. It's employee compensation paid for by the employees. Only 27% actually is even paid in by the county. So that's just my thoughts. Thank you for your time.
Clarification, Tom, this board has no jurisdiction on raises?
That's correct.
Well, the board could send a letter to the Board of Supervisors suggesting ways of reducing future retirement costs that would deal with increased salaries.
Then nobody got any raises this year, sir. Like most people were cut 5%.
Well, Sheriff Lieutenant's got 10%.
No, we didn't.
You didn't?
No, we did not, sir.
Well, I saw it in the newspaper. It was voted on in the morning. It was approved. The morning that we went to Gallo.
Since I'm a sheriff lieutenant and I sit in that bargaining unit, I can tell you we did not get a 10% pay raise. What we got was we entered into a 2.5-year agreement with the county. We got a 3% pay raise and nothing else. And then as a result of the most recent health care negotiations with the county, we ended up with a 2.5% takeaway. So if we want to look at it as a net cost, we ended up basically getting a 0.5% pay raise. So that's a point of clarification.
Okay. Yeah, I would like, because the B published it in the newspaper.
And we know how accurate everything is in the written press.
It was on the board agenda, too, for 10%.
No.
But, okay, I'll look it up. Not. But thank you for correcting me. I appreciate that.
Any other comment? Public comment? Consent items. Anybody want to pull? Do we have a recommendation to approve?
I move to approve the consent items.
Second.
Kelly, you got that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Moved and second. Again, any comments from anybody first? If not, we'll go to a vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Pass. Okay. On to item 6. Excuse me. Presentation by Capital Prospect. Telecom.
Thanks, Don.
I get to announce you have to work out the technology. Now that we're into the new technology concept.
Hi, Marilyn. This is the Stansera Retirement Board. I'm going to put you on the speakerphone for your presentation. Can you hear us?
We can hear you. Can you hear us all right?
Yes, we can.
Very good. Well, Liz Knope and I are here.
Hi, Liz.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So you have our materials. Would you just like us to go through them?
Whatever you think is appropriate.
Okay. Well, first of all, happy holidays to everybody. We appreciate the ability to do this via phone, particularly at this time of year, rather than coming back and forth across the country. So we do appreciate that.
I hear your plane would have been delayed anyways.
Definitely. I just read something about this storm that we were suffering this morning literally has affected the entire country, is what they said. So, yes, thank you. So the materials you have in front of you are kind of follows outline that we have shown you before. Page one is just a brief summary of the firm, but we have a bit of an update down at the bottom part as to the current assets under management at the end of October, which you see listed there. I have two updates to that number to bring that current. We had a half-day on-site due diligence meeting with one of our current clients about 3 weeks ago, the outcome of which was that we were awarded additional capital from that client, which we were very, very happy to hear. I guess irony would have it, on the same day that we were allocated those funds, we also were made aware that we are losing our first account since we started the firm. So those two events, which I'm happy to answer any questions on, leave our current assets at this point at $772 million on behalf of 8 client relationships. We still have the one that's in the wings that we hope we will hear some news at the first part of the year on the one that's been awarded but not yet funded. And so that's the net effect of that. The account that was lost was the City of Philadelphia, which is the second one that's listed under the different mandates. The Russell 3000 Barclays Aggregate. It was a program that had the only allocation Capital Prospects had to fixed income, which was 20% of that portfolio. And the manager that was managing that portion of the program, it was a core plus strategy and was exposed to the credit issues that we've been living through over the past couple of years. And when the board reviewed the program in its totality, there were individual managers who exhibited volatility that they were uncomfortable with, even though the aggregate equity portion of the program, which was 80% of the program, had outperformed its benchmark since we've been hired by 90 basis points and was a second quartile performer. So we're very disappointed. It is it came with a good news, bad news kind of day, but we wanted to bring you up to date on that. These events just happened in the past couple of weeks. So net effect, current AUM is about 772. If you turn over to page 2, you will see a page you're familiar with that just shows our team of 6 with brief biographies. As a reminder, everyone on the list, with the exception of Ashley Hobson down the bottom, came from our former employer with us. And Ashley's now been with us for a year. She just had her 1-year anniversary. But we've had no people changes. Over to page 3. It's just kind of the snapshot of your funding date. We're coming up on the first anniversary of your funding date, actually. with the amount that we were funded with and the October 31st reconciled market value, the estimated market value at the end of November, these are not reconciled numbers, brings that market value to $60 million. And you see the breakdown of the team of 6 sub-advisors that we have with their allocations, and those numbers are at October 31st.
The next page just goes over the investment characteristics of the program as a whole and each manager individually. The way that this program was structured originally was with a core position of about 60% that includes a quantitative manager, which is 10, and then Channing and Indue, who we view as kind of our mainstream small cap value managers focusing on undervalued high quality companies, kind of traditional value approaches. The remaining 40% is more individualized strategies, Burnside, with a long-term focus on earnings growth as well as the dividend component, very oriented towards evaluating management of individual companies as a key part of their analysis. Keeley, who focuses on corporate restructuring, it's a very specialized approach, and Waldhausen, who emphasizes cash flow generation and individual ideas, including as well some spin-offs. As you can see, the we look at these characteristics on an ongoing basis, and they're very much in line with what we would expect for these managers. We feel that it's well diversified across different sub-styles, if you will, within the small cap value part of the market. So as a whole, the program is nicely diversified. There is a focus on quality, and one measure of that being a much higher ROE measure than the benchmark. As you'll notice, the overall forecast earnings growth is higher than that of the Russell 2000, while the forecast PE is lower. So the PEG ratio, the last time we presented this to you, was more in line with the benchmark, but now it's well below. And we think that, again, this reflects good value characteristics. The program's been run at a moderate risk level. The forecast tracking error based on the holdings is currently about 4.2. And you'll notice that other characteristics as well, the market cap has been a little bit bigger than the benchmark. We don't have a dedicated microcap exposure in this portfolio, but Waldhausen does invest in microcap stocks as part of their strategy, and 10 is a little bit smaller too. So we're pleased with these characteristics. We think that they represent a good profile relative to the benchmark. And the following page looks at the sector distribution for each manager and for the program as a whole. What I think the most dramatic thing to notice is the significant underweighting in financials, with 10 employing more of a sector neutral strategy. They're the one that has the exposure closest to the benchmark. But this has been an area that a lot of managers have stayed away from more recently, and it's actually been one of the key ingredients in the outperformance. The only other significantly, underweighted sector is utilities, and then, materials, industrials, the whole consumer area, and healthcare are higher than the value benchmark. And these just all fall out of, what the managers individually are doing. Just to look at the results for the year to date through October, it's been a difficult year, starting with significant downward pressure on the markets early on, and when everybody was concerned about what was happening in the world at large. And then we, now that we're far removed from it, it appears that we did actually hit a low in March, and then the market reversed sharply and has really been pretty much consistently in positive territory, certainly on an overall basis since then. But the characteristics of that move off the low, which is normal for this point in the cycle, is that lower price, lower quality stocks, stocks with no earnings, ones that have gotten beaten down rather early prior to that, were the ones that have led. And it's been kind of a long period for them to be leading. But in more recent weeks and months, although we're probably at some sort of an inflection point, but things keep bouncing back and forth a bit, but it looks like, the more fundamentally strong companies that have more sustainable earnings prospects and a better business outlook are finally being recognized, and those are the types of companies that our managers typically focus on, and so we believe that, you know, the program should continue to do well in a market that, assuming the market continues to go up, which I think, you know, most people expect as the recovery strengthens that that will be the case. But our managers, we think, should do well in that type of an environment as well. But net of fees for the 10 months, the program's 960 basis points ahead of benchmark. Four of the managers have done particularly well, and the others are closer or a little bit, you know, somewhat behind. Although I will say that looking through to early returns for November, both Keeley and Penn have done better. The outperformance is a combination of stock selection and sector positioning, and it's been about equally occurring from both of those things. As I mentioned before, one of the main elements has been an underweighting as well as stock selection in financials. Another area, not as much of an impact, but still a positive impact, has been an overweighting and stock selection in the consumer discretionary area. And the factor positioning was a slight negative for the 10 months due to the higher than benchmark market cap and kind of a tilt towards higher price to book, which is, you know, evident in characteristics. I think most of the managers are reasonably optimistic, some more than others, about the outlook from here, still feeling that there are attractive values in their areas of expertise, and they're, you know, quite in tune with the environment and the opportunities that they see. And so we're very, you know, pleased with the performance thus far, and we expect that, you know, we should be able to continue to do well. The rest of the presentation is just a snapshot of each of the managers individually and going over their approach as well as a couple of other characteristics.
So we would be happy to answer any questions that you have. I'll mention one administrative item in case you wanted an update on this, but the cut over to the new BONI platform that was took effect on the 1st of December seems to be going fine with the managers. Everyone was out in front of that. We haven't gone through an administrative month yet where we're using the new platform, but it is one that Claudia Lupinacci and our team, who does the day-to-day work on your account, is familiar with from our former employer. So I thought I would just mention that because that was an event that took place here just recently. But with that, you know, we'd be happy to answer any questions, should you have any.
Any questions?
No questions.
No.
No questions.
No questions? That's great. So we, well, we appreciate, again, the ability to be able to update you long distance this time, and look forward to coming out and doing it in person, hopefully, the next time around.
All righty.
Merry Christmas.
And thank you. Happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. We'll move on to 7, presentation Legato.
I'm Victor Himes, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer and CIO at Legato Capital Management. It's great to see you all again. I brought one of our most recent new members of our portfolio management team, Fawad Razak. And he hails from a very distinguished career at Russell Investments and is now, I think, almost officially moved the whole family down to the Bay Area. He's now part of our team, bringing the number to 5, and so we're growing stronger every day. And it's odd and interesting, actually, that Marilyn's on the phone, because I live in Alamo, and I've still got an inch of snow on my lawn, so I should have said I couldn't get here because there was snow. So we've had some pretty strange weather for us old Californians, but very interesting the same. Today we're going to take probably 10 or 15 minutes, if that fits, for your time schedule, because I know you are on the time schedule, and talk a little bit about Legato and a lot more about your portfolio and take any questions you might have. And so if you turn with me to tab one, and we've been doing some work on our materials, so this first chart on page four will look a little different to some of you. And I think one of the things, having been involved in investing and investment banking for the last 25 years, I'm always very interested in how things evolve. Nothing ever remains the same. New products are created. The way you talk about yourself, the way you think about yourself, actually, if it's benefiting from any intellectual increase in skills in your shop, you start to evolve into a new place. And I think as we look at ourselves now, we really see ourselves really as a firm that specializes in investment manager research and due diligence and also portfolio construction. So it's our job to, you know, at least hit 70% of the time, pick the right managers, and then put those managers in a constructive process together with other managers so that they complement one another with a lily in the complement. And so if I could remind you, we've got a universe of about 1,000 managers. We take those managers. We place our due diligence process over those managers. We do a lot of discussing back and forth. Importantly, before anything ever ends up in anyone's portfolio, a different process is laid over it, and that's where all five of the people in the team come together. They come together from completely different perspectives. The way I can assure you of that, you might ask, well, how do you know that? Two things. One, when we go around the room and we look at all the people around the table, there are seven different languages spoken, and they were born on three different continents. The second thing I notice is it's hell to manage people who are really diverse in their thinking because they receive and gather information. But the benefit, we think, to our firm and to our clients is you ask every question. In other words, if you have people that have been trained and educated in different ways, they ask different questions. And the point that we always want to leave a decision with is we think we've asked all the questions that needed to be asked. We've weighed the risk associated with those answers, and now we're ready to start to build a portfolio. So that's what we bring to the work of due diligence and building portfolios for institutions. Turn with me. What do we believe on page five? And it's that you can really actually identify, for the most part, managers and place a high conviction in those managers. And the important thing, and I think Marilyn was sharing some of this as well, is make sure their approaches are diverse. And what that really means is, if you think about a benchmark, let's say the benchmark has 2,000 stocks in it, and you decide, okay, I'm going to put five managers, and they're all growth managers, and I'm going to put them together in some type of weighting and just see how it works. Well, that's the highest level. You get some form of natural diversification if you just threw darts at a wall and said, I'm going to pick these five growth managers and see what happens. What we're trying to do is a little bit more than that. We're trying to look at that entire benchmark and say, what processes that we're pulling together in these managers is actually laying hold of a certain piece of that benchmark, so it's represented somewhere in your portfolio. So if you think about it, you've got 2,000 stocks, let's say. We're hoping that we can pick those five or six or seven managers and that somewhere they're overlapping every stock. So every stock has a chance to wind up in your portfolio. And what you want to make sure you're doing is you want to make sure you don't have 300 stocks that everybody's looking at and 700 are left here or 1,700 in that case are left over here and no one's looking. And that's usually what you'll find when you have periods of great up performance as well as great underperformance. If you think about it, if we had a portfolio that over a certain period of time was nothing but financial companies when they were really down in the depths, you might be up 200% right now. If all the portfolios were just doing exactly the same thing, their strategies led them to be overweighted in finance paper. Now, it would have been hellfire and brimstone on the way down as well, but you would have seen the you'd see the pop-up later just because they're all focused. So we're always, as we're building these portfolios, thinking about, in this scenario, who would be buying these types of stocks, valued in what way? And by the way, it's also important the way they actually value stocks. Some may use a quantitative screen, such as Hyde Park in the portfolio. Others may say we start at the very lowest point. We do a fundamental analysis. We take that analysis. We build a portfolio. So it's not just that they do different things. It's actually they find the stocks that have value in different ways. And overall, we're always trying to manage the external relationships with those managers and observing continuously how they fit together. And the last thing I'll say is we're often very, very concerned about whether the managers are doing what we hired them to do. So you'll look in the list of performance per individual manager and say, this manager isn't doing very well. Well, we've thought about that manager, and the questions we ask ourselves are, is that manager performing in a way that we thought it would, given the environment they've just gone through? Because if that's true, and we've built the portfolio well, there'll be other managers that'll offset that risk. They'll be outperforming. And hopefully when things revert, the opposite will happen. And so the important ingredient for us is to always understand, are they sticking to their knitting? Are they doing the things that they claim they would do? And one of the great reasons for bringing Fawad on, as we're always looking at how can we improve our process. And Fawad is a man who spent probably each year writing 150 research reports of meetings he had with managers in this space exclusively at Frank Russell. But what he's also done a lot of is he's kind of pulled the truth out of pulled the truth into money management. And this is what I mean by that. Managers can tell you this is what we do and this is our strategy and this is how we pick stocks. A very important thing for us to do is to actually look at every trade and decide whether those trades fit into the strategy. In other words, I tell you I pick them because everyone has 20% green on it. And if you look in and most have 20% orange, you say, well, you're telling me that, but the portfolio looks different. And that's one of the important ingredients of understanding the managers operating outside of their process. And most people will just look at the numbers and they'll say, oh, they outperformed. I don't really care what they're doing as long as they beat the index. We look at it and say, they outperformed, but guess what? There are too many blues in here and something's wrong. Let's get on a plane. Let's go see them. So it's a very, very interesting process because in the current moment, we're looking at one manager in the portfolio and we've already taken a plane trip to see them. And in one case, the manager's doing very well. And we likely may move them out of the portfolio. Because to us, it's not about you're beating a benchmark. It's about if you're not doing what we've hired you to do, then you're not offsetting risk over here in the way we expected you to. So when something goes wrong over here, we're not going to get the benefit of having have you there. You kind of follow that. So this
I would add that to it. When you look at the manager, you look at their ability to drive performance, outperformance over a long period of time, 3 to 5 years, over a market cycle. Performance over a short period of time is so end period dependent, you know, the quarter to quarter it changes and doesn't tell the story about what the manager is doing. So performance drivers, what are the drivers of performance? You know, is it a good process? And what's in that process that makes it good? Are they good stock pickers? Is it some great investor that has some good insights that understands and gets it? Or it's more of a team process, more of a team dynamic where the knowledge bubbles through information from different sources. If it's a quant process, you need to understand what's driving the process, what are the critical drivers, 3 or 4 or 5 key things that are there and how stable they are. You know, stability of those drivers is very important. And a lot of that is clouded when you look at performance over near term. You know, we have managers that have done very well, but we may not have any high confidence over the long-term stability of those drivers. So they have done well because their process, and like Victor said, their approach, their opportunity set from their pick stocks or their preferred habitat, what I call, that did well, so they did well. You know, so there's so many things that are important that are overlooked because we're all human beings and we all have biases and behavioral biases. I could talk about myself. When I was an analyst at Russell, the most common bias that we identified was performance chasing. You know, good performance near term, good or bad, affects even the best of the analysts and affects their objectivity. That's why it's very critical to focus on the long term drivers. And Victor talked about me writing notes. So there was a process you follow, and you write down what you like about it and what are the critical things, and you monitor it on a quarterly basis. And you And my way of doing was at Russell and Selectuate here is to talk stocks with managers, understand the decisions that they made, and within the context of their process. Often, when you hear managers, the way they list their process is somewhat different than what they actually do, you know, on a stock-by-stock basis. And a better understanding is can be developed by really going down in trenches with them and trying to think like what they think. Sorry, but you know.
No, listen. This is well said. Let's pull it. Continuing on our approach on page 6, you've seen this chart before. We will spare you the detail on it, but nothing there should surprise you. As you know, one hallmark of our product, our process is the conviction ranking, and that's where we take the five categories of a manager's overall organization, team, performance, process. You've heard all the things in structure. We rank them, and the thing we don't do that I hope you all remember is we don't just add the numbers up and average them, and they're 3.3, because that's how you go down, because I don't know what to do with a 3.7. We find what is the biggest driver in this manager? What is the biggest risk to the portfolio? Is it their process? They're falling out of it, and that becomes the driver of the final grade. That driver affects the allocation or how much of your money they can have. So it's very much interactive. It's very dynamic. They get rescored every quarter. Doesn't generally lead to a lot of turnover, but we know, and ratings move as we go through time. That's a very important thing to capture. The firm on page 8, just under $1.1 billion, a good sprinkling of large, small, SMID. A little bit deceptive because, as you know, one of our clients is CalPERS, so most of that manager development is CalPERS, which takes a little bit of our time, but nowhere close to the time we spend on actually managing money for the rest of our clients, which is in a competitive way against benchmarks, building multi-manager portfolios. Turning to page 2, and I think Marilyn did a great job of this, so I'm going to be real quick with the economy. Really, the one thing I have for you is since March, and you all know what happened since March, because it was March 9th when we were at the bottom and everyone was jumping out of airplanes and wondering what was going to happen next, we've had a massive junk rally, which is not unusual, which is not uncharacteristic of what we would see during such a difficult turn downward. But one big cautionary note that I'll leave you with and then move on is that there are two different universes thinking about where the world is going right now, particularly in the United States. And I can define them very clearly. It's the people who own stocks, and it's everybody else. And I was at a conference at another California county, and there were probably 100 people in a room, and we're all money managers. And it's a big forum. The big question came up, and this is how it was captured. Who thinks inflation is going to be a problem from now out 18 months? And who thinks inflation is going to be a problem 3 to 5 years from now? And all the hands went up, and I'll tell you, 95 hands went up for 0 to 18 months there's going to be inflation. Five of us held our hands up and said, maybe in 3 to 5 years, or 0 to 18 months in the first group, 3 to 5 years in the other group. So there were five of us. And unfortunately, I was sitting on the right side, so they asked me first. Because only five of us, why do you think this is not going to be a problem? And I said, because everyone in this room owns stocks. But when I get on the bar train every day to go to work, those are the real people. And if you heard the conversations on the train, there's a funeral taking place in the country, and everybody's missed it. And they're busy thinking everything's getting better, and nothing's getting better. Nothing's moving. Nothing's happening. And if you even listen to what Bernanke said 2 days ago, he said, you know, are we going to tighten again? Remember, everyone thought he's going to tighten. He came out and said, no, I'm not sure this is going to work, because he's riding the train somewhere, I guarantee you. And he's watching people, and he's saying, no one's hiring anyone. You can get on a train and know who's interviewing for a job by the way they're dressed and the way they behave on the plane or the train. You hear the conversations, the interact. You all are doing the same things. And so who thinks we're getting better? This is going to be a very difficult time. And I think that time is going to go 3-4 years into the future. We will see improvements, but we're not going to see some sweeping, dramatic transformation of the U.S. economy and everyone's going to be smiling and, you know, popping champagne a year from now. It's just not in the cards. There are too many structural problems. One of the things I do is I listen to people who actually are running small businesses. And it's fascinating because you've all heard that the big banks are about to pay off all their TARP money. You know, Bank of America's going to do this whole thing. Well, do you know how they're paying the TARP money off? Because these small, here's again shaking, small businesses that may have had a $2 million line of credit with Bank of America, when they called to use it, they said it's gone. And they said, well, we have a great credit rating. It's gone. Well, we've always paid our premium on time. It's gone. And all that went into the TARP kitty. And then when it got up to $25 billion, because we're constraining the loans we have outstanding, and now they're going to send it all back to the Treasury. How is that stimulating to the economy? That kills the economy. And Bernanke knows that. And so that's what's really going on here. So no one's gotten any better in the real working world. What's happened is we've put a noose around their necks. We've taken their credit away. We've removed it, and we're giving it back to Washington. We don't know what they're going to do with it. We hope they'll do something that really actually stimulates jobs, because this didn't. They thought the banks were going to get it and go give it to the businesses, and it didn't happen. So the good news is we get a second chance. We can actually try to get it right to the people in small businesses that will actually utilize it and create jobs. But this process, we, as far as the employment scenario looks right now, you might as well go back a year ago. It's unchanged. No one is hiring big. No one has any plans to hire. Banks are not lending to small businesses. And having worked in a bank, people say, well, how does that manifest itself? You go there and you turn your application in, and it's a strong application, and you interact with the loan officer, and then they tell you no, like a day later. And you go in and say, I don't understand why. And you give very good reasons, and they say, yes, you've had a great relationship. What they don't realize is the loan officer is telling them no, because if the loan officer brings a loan to their supervisor, they get fired. It has nothing to do with the quality of your loan. You get fired. And that's what's going on right now. So you tell me, if you're a banker and your supervisor says, you make a loan, you're out of here. That's what's going on in a lot of the banks right now. And so we've got a long slog. And so, you know, I think to date we ran the numbers, and I think since inception now we're up about 500 basis points, 300 in the book. But this is going to be a very challenging time. You're going to see small companies do well. You're going to see them underperform, because it's going to be a seesaw of trying to get it right with regard to, are people really getting jobs? Is there new creation of wealth really going on? Have we kind of seen the end of the housing issues? The housing issues very quickly have just moved in scale. And this is a scary thing to witness. The foreclosure numbers in the 1 million and higher house market are exploding upward. Unbelievable. The people who basically are never supposed to have a problem are foreclosing now at record levels. Because time is the killer. If you're living off your savings, if you wait long enough, you run out of savings. Everybody in this room knows this. I know this. And that's what's going on right now. And it's very quiet. You know, my son, 17-year-old, is a senior in high school. We live out in Alamo. He comes in and he says at the dinner table, Dad, Joe, they moved. I said, well, really? He says, yeah, they just left. I said, well, did you say goodbye? No, he didn't. I went by his house. It's empty. They leave in the night. It's unbelievable. And so this moment in time galvanizes for me how my mother, who's 86, thought about the Depression. Everyone knew someone who lost everything. And when this is over, we probably already do, I know I do, we all know someone who's lost their house. And that's what makes this a transformational moment, that will galvanize in our minds. And 20 years from now, I'll remember this, and I'll remember things I'll never do again. I'll remember things I'll tell people, don't ever do that again. Never trust a bank. All the things that we used to hear, put your money under the mat. That's how it starts. You actually see it happen. So it's going to be a very turbulent time. Long way to tell you that, but it is. It's not over. And you're going to see it manifest itself in small cap stocks, because they're going to be very volatile. You'll make, the portfolio managers will make great bets. They won't make such good bets. You're going to see these things moving all over the place. But no, that's the nature of this market. And so just, you know, be there, because you don't, we won't all be up 1,500 basis points. We'll have moments where we're under. And that's going to be a part of the play. Nothing goes up forever. But I did want to deliver to you, no one's just sobering, I guess, at this point. But, you know, I'm a very optimistic guy. Remember, I was a bond guy for years. We're very, kill the market, now a stock guy, but much more optimistic. But we've got some real tough slogging ahead. I don't think anything I've said would pass anyone in this room as not something you can actually see if you really just look at what's going on around you. Don't like to hear it, but that's really the nature of things. Very quickly, in the third section, we talk about really just what we see as our mandate against the Russell 2000 growth, rank in the top 40%. It's been just about, I think, a year almost on the point. And that's, although we're so excited about this relationship, that's still noise as far as a time period for us. I mean, we're looking 3 to 5 years of making sure things are going well over that period. The assets are shared on page 12. What I'd like to do in the interest of time, is pass it to my colleague Fawad in Section 4 and have him spend a few minutes about just the character of the last quarter and then talk a little bit more about the specific managers in the portfolio.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. I think we talked about so often now what the third quarter was. It's an extension of the low quality rally, as we discussed earlier. And even more so, distressed companies, low price to book, cheap value, all did very well. And fundamentally driven companies, the managers who are more focused on the evidence of improvement, or higher quality focused managers lagged. The way we construct portfolio, we want to make sure that we have broad representation of the benchmark, and there are no apparent holes out there. We did relatively okay. We gave back 90 basis points, roughly 90 basis points in the third quarter. Consumer discretionary is the sector that led, and we have manager who did pretty well in that sector. And like Victor said, that manager served the purpose, and we knew that that manager is not very focused on high quality. It's more focused on trying to find companies that can that are better positioned for recovery, for change, for positive change. And there was a huge surge that started in the second, end of first quarter, second quarter, after the huge dislocation in the market. The surge was mostly sentiment driven. In the third quarter, there was some towards the end. There was some signs of the stocks moving on fundamentals, on evidence of earnings surprise and estimate revisions. So September was relatively better. Fourth quarter is not here. I think we are up about 160. What is the index? So year to date, till December 8th, we are up just over 500 weeks for the year. Like I said, it's a short period for evaluating performance, but this is what it is. And a lot of that to do with how we pick manager. Manager research is at the core of what we do. And then very important aspect is portfolio construction, making sure that you have broad representation in the index. Well, we never know, and you can never predict, which part of the index is going to lead the whole benchmark, the whole index. It's going to be the continuation of the junk. It's going to be double dip. A lot of people are concerned about potential for a double dip because, as Victor said, there is not big evidence of a real change going on in the underlying economy. Yes, the second derivative, that change for the worse that accelerated at the end of last year, that change that we are getting worse slowed down. So we are not getting worse. Fine. And that market gave a huge relief rally based on sentiments. And now you're at a point where you want to see real evidence. So we want to make sure whichever is the way the market is going to be, whether it's a continuation of the rally that has gone on so far, or it's going to be picked up by now real-based, fundamental-based rally, high-quality stocks, more sustainable growers are going to pick up that rally and take it further. Whichever it goes, make sure that we are there and we have broad representation in the index. It was a difficult year, I think, for active management in general. But I think we did pretty okay. In terms of manager, I will take you to page 18. It just talks about the characteristics. So we have our market cap is higher than the index, so it's still within the 33% plus minus guideline. So it's right about there. In general, our valuation of the portfolio is generally lower than that of the index. Long-term growth rates is like index-like, and return on equity and debt, which is the quality matrix. We're higher on that, so we're higher on the, in general. On we try to be as balanced as we can, but on the tilt, we have slightly higher quality tilt, and on valuation, it's slightly cheap than the benchmark. And growth rates are right where the benchmark is. Given where our characteristics stand, I think the performance was really good. because we didn't expect to do to outperform by this much, given our quality tilt. But given that we have broader representation of the index, we managed to do well.
Section C, maybe just close with that.
Section B.
Right. So, which one are we going to?
We're on Section B in the appendix. B. Appendix and then Section B. We thought we'd give you an overview of the managers quickly and then take questions.
This is total portfolio and then some advisors. We have managers listed there. It's Chinook, Nicholas, Noeen, Jewelbridge, Stephens. And a couple of managers like Chinook and specifically Nicholas, you know, have more, you know, have less focus on high quality and more on change, on perception of change or on sentiment. And that really helped that manager and helped the portfolio in that sense. So, and Chinook and Nicholas together also benefited from their ability to reposition the portfolio towards early cyclical, consumer cyclical. That also helped the overall portfolio. The higher quality managers, Stephens and Riverbridge, that are much more focused on high quality. Riverbridge avoids cyclical exposures. It's secular all through and doesn't play into energy and commodity cyclicals, materials, autos. Then we want to make sure that other managers really play into that space, like Nicholas and Chinook. So we're not left behind. So performance of each manager, based on their preferred habitat and where they pick stocks, met our expectations on overall basis.
I want to say one more thing about this page before we close. You might notice the language Fawad's using. He's not saying this manager's bad and this manager's good, based on who's up or who's down. That's very important to hear, because we're building a portfolio that hopefully weathers any kind of storm, being the market. And so unless the manager's out of their process, everybody died yesterday, or something fundamentally changed that shakes them out of that, we don't see the managers as good and bad. We see the managers, and I think Fawad made the point, he said, the portfolio's actually done better than it should have, believe it or not. You know, this portfolio, the way we've constructed it, should not have done this well. So it's interesting to hear that, because you'd say, well, these are the bad managers, they underperformed. These are the good managers. No. They were all doing what they were supposed to do. They had luck on their side and a few extra good things, and so the returns came out the way they did. We're looking at one manager here because we think the manager's got the potential to drift out of their style, and that's why we're looking at them seriously and getting on a couple more planes. So we may have a manager that we want to change. Therein, it's another victory for you, because we can make the change overnight, and you don't have to have a meeting and go through the approval process and fly them all in and go through that, which is one of the great things about a multi-manager portfolio. But in one case, I know of a manager that we look here, they're outperforming, and we've got some questions. So it's not good or bad. It's always about, are they doing what we hired them to do? So they should do poorly in this market, so they should be underperforming by between 300 and 500 basis points. Oh, they're not? They're outperforming by 300? What's wrong? Did we miss something? Or are they cheating? Or are they buying stocks they shouldn't be buying? That's very, very important. And we think most people would just say, oh, they're doing well, leave them alone. We say, ask some more questions, let's make sure, let's run them through our process. Are they doing? Let's check every stock they bought. Does it fit into their strategy? So those are very important things for us to leave with you, as just as we go through time and you begin to watch the portfolio, remember, there are no good or bad managers. It's just, are they doing what they're supposed to do in the particular environment?
I would say the portfolio managers are in the portfolio, so we all treat them as equal. So if they're in the portfolio, they are good managers. But on a relative scale, if you can ask me, there are managers that I like more. But that has very little to do with their performance.
Right.
And the manager that I may like more may have underperformed this year, but I still like it. And the manager that I like least may have outperformed the most. But doesn't make me like it.
Anyway, we'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
All right, I'll start with a question.
Mm-hmm.
We heard just before, and I think you did too, from Capital Prospects, the hope and expectation that the market's going to improve a little bit. You've laid out the possibility that there could be a double dip or there could be downward as well. You have a diversified portfolio with different managers with different skills. Who's protecting me if we do go to a double dip from your managers? Which one would I expect to be my savior in your group because that's the way you structure it.
We probably agree, but I'd start with Riverbridge.
Riverbridge?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you come back in whatever period of time, 6 months, and say, oh my gosh, the market went down, we had a double dip, then I should be able to look at your portfolio and say, okay, but Riverbridge shouldn't help me.
Absolutely.
Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely.
And I like that.
And let me take this from my old world of fixed income.
Mm-hmm.
No one likes bonds. And so when you come to a meeting like this, everyone would want to fall asleep because, you know, bonds are horrible. Mm-hmm. And I would always come and I would say, before I ever open my mouth about your portfolio, you should know exactly what happened if I tell you which way interest rates went.
Right.
In other words, it's the same question you just asked. I think it's a great question. You should say, you know something? I know the duration was long in the portfolio. Interest rates rose. So the one thing I've learned after all these years of listening to Victor go on about bonds is down. Okay? I'm going to underperform the benchmark.
Right.
More complicated because you say, I'm overweighted in corporates. And I think Marilyn alluded to this about the bond in the client that they lost. Okay, credit has gone berserk, right? High yield, you go back to December, high yield spreads in the bond market, 2,000 basis points. So what that means in English is, if the index is at zero, you had 20%, okay? That was the spread between high yield. It's come into like 700 over the last 9 months. And so knowing that, you should be able to come to the table and say, I have a high yield bond manager who deals in the really bad junk, you know, the bottom of the, you know, the catfish stuck in the bottom of high yield. They should be hitting a home run off the planet. You should know that before we ever show up.
Right.
So that is an excellent question because we're trying to give you the character of the portfolio so you understand what's happening and how these managers play off one another.
Let me reverse it on you. You come back, the market's gone much higher than you expected. Who am I going to look at as being the one that helped me the most?
I'll take that. So if the market goes higher, so Chinook and Nicholas should do better than the market.
Okay.
And if the double dip occurs, the Riverbridge and followed by Stephens should outperform.
Okay.
And the manager in the middle, manager like Hyde Park, should perform index-like, okay, wherever it is.
So then I've got a way to judge whether you know what you're doing. When you come back, regardless which way the market goes,
absolutely,
I can look at this and say, hey, you're right or wrong.
Absolutely. And you might recall when we were here last time, I said, I think we had performance, it was up 200 or 300, I may be wrong, and Marilyn was up 700. And what I said was, the real question for you all is, if we were both under 300 and 700, would you be saying, we made a good decision to hire both of these groups?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. Because that's when all the poor decisions get made, where people say, whoops, I never expected this. Let's sell. Okay, the worst decision you can make. So I'm always talking about not the good time. I'm talking about, do we all have the staying power in the bad time? Because the good time will come, and there'll be troubled times. But it's those moments that it's critical for groups, if they're going to act in the best interest of their, you know, beneficiaries, to say, I knew this was within the expectation set. I'm okay. I remember when it was up 700. Okay, so I should be very cautious. Make sure Legato, make sure Cap Prospects are sticking to their knitting, doing what we hired them to do. This too will pass. So, excellent question.
Do you, Victor, as the allocator of capital, put in your economic views and the recent huge rally in the markets to potentially shift assets from Chinook and Nicholas to Riverbridge? And managers like that to protect the portfolio a little bit?
We do that, Paul, in the sense that we look at the whole world and risk, and we say, what's the best allocation to all the managers to weather whatever storm? Because we don't know the future.
Right.
That's the problem. So you're always trying to buy. We're not betting. We're not saying, okay, I really think this is going to be a double dip, so let's move all this money over here. We say, we think that may happen, but we don't know. So what's the best, given I don't know, what's the best combination and weights that I would put in these managers? Something you didn't ask that's very important is every quarter, it's about to happen in the next few weeks, the whole team comes together, there's pizza, 1 to 9 p.m., two nights in a row. And what you have to come to the meeting with is you get this big giant binder, and that's everything we've collected on every manager, all 17 funded managers at our company. Everyone sends their vote and their numbers into the manager of compliance at the firm who doesn't sit in the meeting. So I don't know what Fawad thinks. I don't know what any of the other people think. And then we walk in and we get a sheet of paper. You know what it says? It shows every single manager we've given money to, each of the five conviction scores, what we believe it should go to, and then, to your question, Paul, it ranks. You're forced to rank every manager, 1 through 17. The question is, if you had a dollar today and you could give it to one person, who would it be? That's the list. And you walk into the room, everybody's stuff's down there, and you know what it does? Now everybody has a point of view. They don't say, well, Victor likes to talk, he's the CIO, so let's hear what he wants to do and we'll decide to do that. No, I want to hear what every single person has to do. And in that process, you start to really understand, is this manager really doing what they should be doing? Because you're getting five points of view all being brought together. And they are basically clean of any disturbance of, you know, influence because I said something in the room or someone else thought or I know them better than you do. And those are the things, I think, that keep you thinking very clearly and being willing to move managers around and saying, I don't feel so good about this manager. He's out.
And that relative ranking from 1 to 17, 1 being best, 17 being relatively not as good, is driven by our conviction or the long-term performance drivers. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with performance, like recent performance. But are you confident about holding that manager over a market cycle? Are you confident if that manager is down 700 feet versus a benchmark? Do you still like that manager as much because you think you understand it and like it? That's more on a long-term picture. We do it every quarter.
Before we close, 2 seconds. I'm writing down Chinook. Yes. Because at the next meeting, right, we're going to bring a chart that is going to, you're going to love this chart.
I would add one point is that we have two managers, Chinook and Nicholas, that should do better in aggressive markets, and two managers that should do better in double dip or high quality scenario. But these are examples. You know, even if you don't see one of these managers in the next quarter, it will be a manager like the one that's replaced. So if Chinook or Nicholas or Riverbridge is not there, one of those managers next quarter, it will be replaced by a like manager that covers that space. Okay. And then we will identify it for you.
Okay. You'll explain.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always good to be here.
Other questions? We'll hear from you how it goes up, what the results are. Appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
And Wesley, I have to say bye for the many years.
Good to see you.
Congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too.
Paul, I guess you're up.
Yes.
Paul, can I ask you a question before you start?
Of course.
You just left something up that I've been kind of curious. Where is Mazama these days? Can you tell me that?
I have to go back and look. They've done well in this kind of low quality mm-hmm. rally. But I have met with Steve Brink, who we met when we went to Portland once. He was the director of research and mm-hmm. resigned. And he started his own firm and had many discussions with him. And interesting discussions, and I'm convinced we made the right move. But I can come back with.
Oh, that's all right. I just got your opinion.
They've done okay in this market. I know that.
Okay.
I feel really good with the two programs. So on the small cap, mm-hmm. I mean, they're performing really well, and they're much kind of steadier. And we don't have that manager specific risk. I couldn't be more pleased with them, both of them.
Good.
November, we don't have the monthly report because of the time of the month we're meeting here in December, but a quick calculation on the policy index was up about 3.5% in November, so it was another strong month, which leads us into our asset projections that we're presenting as our sole item today. Page 2, it's the page after the cover since I have trouble numbering pages. We meet twice a year to set capital market expectations, which are the expected returns, risks, and correlations of the asset classes. We just met about a month ago, and you can see on page 2 what the expected returns and risk or standard deviations of each of the asset classes were when we last met in May, in the spring, and now in the fall. And we've made some dramatic changes. expected returns specifically, and a lowering of expected returns. And that's based on the huge rally that we've seen these last few months since March, lowering developed equity markets by 90 basis points kind of across the board. Fixed income went from 4.5% to 4%, and that's simply the what we call the yield to worst on the Barclays Capital Aggregate Index. So the yield is right around 4% on that index, and we don't assume any interest rate change or change in principal of the bonds in that index. And to a lesser extent, emerging markets was lowered by 70 basis points, not the full 90, and real estate by 40 basis points. So we believe in reversion to the mean. We generally move things, asset classes, 10, 20 basis points maybe from one period to the next, but we've been in an unusual, extraordinary market environment, and the huge rally has led us to lower our expected returns. Now, our inflation went down also from 2.5 to 2.3, so it's also important to keep in mind the differential between the asset classes and inflation, and also remember that the actuary is using a 3% inflation rate, so our inflation rate is much lower. Page 3 are the correlations. Again, I should say up front, this is kind of just a presentation, information only. We're not expecting to make any action on that, but it'll be an ongoing discussion that we'll have, and it's a start of that discussion. Correlations, as we all know, went way up during times of stress. The trend, even without the crisis, was for developed international markets correlation to the U.S. markets have been going up as globalization takes place. You see that's 0.78 now, international to U.S. large cap. And there are a couple asset classes here, like TIPS, for example, that have very low correlations. Although I kind of agree with Victor that I think the short term is still deflationary in nature, with inflation being more of a concern intermediate to longer term. I think there's still time for that. Page 4 is the optimization results of Stansera's current target mix. Back in May, it was 8.36% with an expected risk of 11.54. Today, because of the lowering of the expected returns, we're down to 7.57%. 89 basis points lower at the same level of risk. Our target portfolio is exactly the same, with the exception of real estate being reduced from 3 to 1.5, with that additional 1.5 going to fixed income, 30.6 to 32.1, which was just the realization that we weren't going to fund Invesco Global REITs, to the full 3%. As I said, inflation is 2.3%. The actuary is 3%. Our real return is actually 5.27%, 7.57 minus the 2.3. If you add 5.27% real return to the actuary's 3%, we get to 8.27, which is a way to look at the actuary and the 8.16% to have a portfolio return kind of in line with that. Obviously, ours on the surface is below that. I think, though, because of the inflation differentials, we can justify keeping the 8.16% actuary assumption rate. And by keeping it, we avoid various ramifications otherwise. Page 5 is our existing asset classes. I've provided a mix based on some of the board members asking potentially to take equity risk off the table. Obviously, it's better to consider taking equity risk off the table after a 60-65% move in the equity markets versus before, like some funds did. And we did it by taking the 5% solely from the U.S., 4 from the large cap, 1 from the small cap. We have basically an 80-20 ratio of large cap to small cap. And then adding the 5% of core fixed income, which would go up from 32.1 to 37.1. And you can see the expected return gets lowered by about 20 basis points, but the expected risk gets lowered by 80 basis points. So that's a fairly substantial reduction in risk from just a 5% move out of equities. Page 6 looks at the structure, how potentially that would be affected if a 5% move was taken out of U.S. equities into core fixed income, into fixed income. I should say investment-grade fixed income. As per our guidelines, you see the managers and U.S. equity on the top would be slight differentials among the active managers being lessened. We would keep the passive the same. In the fixed income space, what I did was the Dodge & Cox was at 30.6, and we're raising that to 32.1 in fixed, and we could add the 1.5 that's coming from real estate and the 5% reduction from U.S. equities into a second fixed income manager. As you recall, we have a questionnaire out to a handful of managers who will be responding to us by the end of this year, and as we continue this discussion and the search for potentially a second investment-grade fixed income manager, the funding of that manager could be a combination from the current manager plus potentially a reduction in risk. I can go back based on your direction and do more scenarios on various types of mixes, but I thought, you know, a 5% reduction in equity risk was, you know, a fairly good place to start.
Well, on that page 6,
mm-hmm.
Down near the bottom, when you've got the total, you've got it San Joaquin, Sarah.
Oh, I do. You're right. Mm-hmm. My apologies. I'm getting old, Wes. I'm catching up.
You don't know old.
Yeah.
That's right.
I apologize. The expected alpha for U.S. equity is also listed below, so keep in mind when we do the expected returns and risk for the asset classes, that's assuming a completely passive weighting to those asset classes. We do expect to add about 125 basis points in alpha just from the U.S. equity exposure. And there's the tracking error from the current to the mix one. We do reduce the tracking error slightly because we make the mix more style neutral than it is currently. Page 7, the decision-making points. Again, this is information only at this point, and it will be an ongoing. But, the first bullet point's been done. The second is the looking at taking 5% away from U.S. equities to reduce equity risk from the portfolio. It's not a huge move. Equity risk will still be overriding the total portfolio, even if you take 5% away from U.S. equity. We're looking to add a investment-grade fixed income manager to complement Dodge & Cox. That's in process. So that's really the presentation, and I think it's no surprise that, our expected returns for the asset classes have come down given what's happened these past 7-8 months. It's really kind of follows on a quantitative scale what Victor just talked about on his economic talk, and these markets have been going up recently from liquidity primarily, and from two factors. One is the carry trade has been transferred to the U.S. with short-term rates at close to 0%, and two, just the liquidity injections from the government central bank programs have been flowing into the markets, and especially the riskier equity markets. It's funny, there was the old saying that Marty Zweig used to say, don't fight the Fed. And another saying would be, don't fight liquidity. It could go on a lot longer and a lot greater than people think it will, and I think it might have already gone on farther than a lot of people have thought at this point, and it can continue, and it's welcome, but I think it's a good discussion to have about always on your to spend time on asset allocation, because that determines your returns more than anything else, and particularly on potentially reducing equity risk after this huge rally in equity and riskier assets. So I'll take any questions or discussion, and as I said, we will continue to monitor this, and I think it plays along well with the fixed income search we're doing also.
Any questions?
These REITs, are they ever going to be a good investment anytime soon?
Well, they've been a good investment since March. They're up 70%, but I think...
Are they gaining in other countries and not here?
Particularly in other countries because of the currency play they've been gaining, yeah. So having a global REIT portfolio versus just a U.S. REIT portfolio only, we would have been worse off having a U.S. REIT portfolio only, mainly from the currency component. They perform much like other equities. They've been more on the downside prior to March, and they've rallied pretty more than the general equity market since March. I think that's a discussion we can have, though, also whether you want to pull the plug on it. It's only 1.5% of the portfolio, and frankly, Invesco, in their most recent presentation to us, that page with the smiley faces, and they were mostly frowns, so they're not.
That's good. I just wonder if we shouldn't get out.
Yeah, it's a good discussion.
Is that something you want to recommend for future?
We can put that on January.
Let's start taking a look and see whether or not we just want to get out of that class. Yes.
Put it on January?
At least look into it.
I agree.
I'm too optimistic. But,
and just like we just said, it's good to look at it after it's up 70% from the lows. Then, you know, it's not... Doesn't at 1.5%, it doesn't do anything for the portfolio much anyway.
Any other questions, Paul? Yeah.
This isn't a question, but I think we all get the Pension and Investment magazine. The latest issue has an article. Mm-hmm. Demand still strong. The demand is for professional consultants and. SIS is in here, in the top 10 consultants worldwide by institutional advisory assets. And then, if you go a little further, for the top 25 consultants in the U.S., not worldwide, but U.S., SIS is in here at number 5.
We don't have a big book of business compared to a lot of firms, but we have some of the larger public funds as our clients, so that kind of skews it, like State of New York, State of New Jersey, State of Wisconsin, New York City Police. So it's
still a lot of money.
It's a lot of money under advisement to be a fiduciary for you, as you're well aware, being fiduciaries for your plan, so as well as we are. So I don't think it's good or bad. It's just we tend to have a lot of large plans.
Well, I think it's good. It shows that you're
wanting. Put it on the wall.
Thanks, Wes, though.
Yeah. Did you get the copy?
We have it in our office, yeah.
Here you are, a little old Stanislaus County.
I still have time for us. Isn't that nice?
Hey, we still meet our minimum, so.
Let's hope we never get too low.
No, you're grandfathered. let's hope not.
Any other questions of Paul? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to number 9, correspondence.
Any retirement board members received the correspondence from Loomis Sales and Companies, their response to their review status and under performance? Any questions?
Tom, didn't we also, weren't we also getting a revised cost?
Yes, the performance fees are in place as of July 1st of 2009. Loomis Sales will only receive 25 basis points as a minimum asset fee, and then they will receive performance fees after a year if they're more than 500 basis points higher than the Russell 2000 growth index. Russell 1000
growth. Right. This is just puts in writing what we verbally had described, and Tom and his staff, went back to Loomis and said, we want this in writing and changed.
I thought maybe they would address it in the letter, which they were just talking about.
Their performance package. Right.
What happens if they don't perform?
They don't perform, they're only, from their standpoint, on the fee side, they're only collecting 25 basis points.
So that goes on until we decide to take another action.
Right. And if they don't perform, then we obviously have a decision whether they're to retain them or not.
Anything else on Loomis? Go to administrator.
Okay, there are three agreements with Bank of New York Mellon that have been reviewed by myself and legal counsel, and also Paul Hart reviewed the first two to see their business effect. And those all, we're all in agreement that we should move forward into these agreements. The first one deals with a loss on Lehman Brothers and the cash collateral insufficiency. For the securities lending program, it was a $5 million Lehman Brothers, which clearly they're being in bankruptcy currently. That paper is worth only about $700,000 on the market value. And what this agreement, although our original master agreement with Bank of North Carolina says Stansara would absorb all of the loss, this agreement of March 17, 2009 would provide the Bank of New York will enter in and absorb 30% of the loss. As they do 30%, they collect 30% of the current revenue, we collect 70%. But on the reverse side here, they're willing to step in and take 30% of the loss. And so we only suffer about 70% of the loss. That brings the total loss to just under $3 million instead of higher than that.
Tom, that sounds good. There's no downside on this.
I don't see any downside.
Do you need any action on that?
Just approval for entering the agreement.
Shall we take a vote on that one? Can I get a motion?
So moved. Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next one.
Okay, the next one is basically just to allow Bank of New York to take our current revenue from the securities lending program and use that to offset our current cash deficiency in the program. After about 2 years, they figure the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy will be resolved, and we'll finally know what the final figures are. We don't obviously know until that occurs what the final figures will be on the value of the Lehman Brothers paper. But this would allow us to begin to kind of amortize or offset that cash deficiency by just having the securities lending revenue be deposited into the deficiency account.
Does this extend our lending agreement, or is that something under discussion, or how does that work?
Well, my thought at this point is that we would continue with Bank of New York in any event to do securities lending, and this revenue will offset that deficiency at this point in time.
Length of time commitment, years review, how does that work?
The board can at any time re-review, but I think I don't know that we're locking ourselves in with this particular agreement in any length of time. This particular agreement just says we're going to take the cash.
Are we currently in an agreement for X number of years or anything? I don't even know where we are in lending agreement.
Yeah, not in a particular length of time.
Do we bring it to review in 2012? Or?
Well, the first agreement talks about a 2012 date, about the disposition of the Lehman Brothers. January 1st, 2012. I think that was the way that
okay, so we're in a lending agreement. The lending agreement has some profits. The profits will be used to offset the losses.
No.
So essentially, it doesn't hit our books at zero until things take care of.
Right.
This doesn't change agreement times. Whatever we have as far as agreement stays in place. And we reviewed at some future date.
Don't worry, there's a rumor the world's going to end in 2012.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm coming. 2012. Okay. Hello. That was a confirmation.
Yeah. World ending? Okay. Any other questions, concerns on this one before we ask for, I guess we need approval on this one too?
Yes.
So I need a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Any issues? Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The heck with the world ending, we're okay. Go on.
And then the final agreement is, as we told you at the last meeting, we were in the process of transferring computer information systems from the original Bank of New York Inform system to the Mellon system, which is called Workbench. And this agreement provides them to be able to release security and ID and so forth for staff so that we can get into the system and get reports and information that we need. And so we recommend that the board approve moving forward with doing that.
Sounds to me like if we didn't approve this, we'd have got problems.
Well, we could still probably get reports, but we wouldn't be able to get into the system.
Any downside on this one?
No. Not that I see.
Okay. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion, any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Vote. Okay. Passes. Committee reports. Standing Committee, Internal Governance, Ron Martin.
We have a public fund summit scheduled for the first week in January, which was not on the last calendar, not approved, but we have two members signed up to go, so we need approval.
Arizona in January.
There's just travel costs. There's no registration fee.
Move to approve.
Second.
Second.
Move and second to approve Arizona in January. Any discussion?
Who is it who's going?
Got that on the record? Oh. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Passes. Closed session. I guess we need a motion.
Moving to closed session.
Do we want to take a break or are people going to keep going?
Let's go.
Let's go. Good. Second.
Keep going. Yeah. Moved and seconded. Closed session. I don't know. Just as Ron. Okay.
At 4:49.
Okay, so we're out of closed session. And we need a read back on the first couple items and then close session.
There's just one.
Just the one.
First one?
Yeah.
Motion was made by Darren Garrett and seconded by Ron Martin to authorize legal counsel to research causes of action against Buck Consultants. Motion carried unanimously.
Members forum, I'll pass. Any?
Let's see, I think I had a list.
Don't spoil it.
None.
Go on through the list.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, everybody.
Anything?
Nope.
Merry Christmas to everyone, and thank you, Wes, for all your years of service.
Mm-hmm. Any going down the
road? I already thanked Wes last time, so nothing.
You should have done it this time.
Yeah, he's new.
Happy holidays to everyone. Enjoy.
It's been a pleasure being on the board with you, and happy retirement, a real retirement. Yeah.
Real thing.
Going across the table there.
Just a few things. First, I'll wrap. Make it quick. Make it quick. First thing, thank you, Wes, for all of your years of service to not only this system, but to county employees and to the taxpayers of this county, because I think overall we've all seen that this has been managed very well. And that's greatly to do with your membership on this board. And no offense to Mr. DeMartini, but you are a rarity in government. You have honesty and integrity. Second of all, to follow up with something you had requested here a few months back, Jim, our excess earnings policy. The ad hoc committee did meet today, and that will be coming back in January for a revised excess earnings policy. So I just wanted to report that back to you. And finally, before it's leaked out by someone else at this table, I cannot think of a finer group that I would like to spend the last few hours of my working day on my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday! Happy birthday! Yeah. Should have
brought your cupcake.
This is the group right here.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I just wish you all good luck on continuing looking out for our retirement system. Thanks for the opportunity.
Merry Christmas, everybody, and I'll talk to you at the other thing if we ever make it. I have nothing.
I will miss you very much.
Merry Christmas, and yeah, congratulations on 43 and a half years of service, Wes Hall. Enjoy your real retirement.
Thank you.
You gave it a good kickstart.
Yes. Okay, we stand adjourned until January
13th. That's